Talked a bit about politics earlier in the morning. We want to continue that with one, who basically consumes it, I would think, on a daily basis and pays it forward with the fellows and more, Hauenstein Center for Presidential Studies, Director Gleaves Whitney in the house. Gleaves, good morning to you.
Good morning, Shelley.
Oh, you voted.
I voted.
You did
my
vote.
Little sticker.
It's there, and it will stay there all day. Give me until 4 o'clock. I'll pull the lever. Yeah, it will be my turn. So it's important to vote, Gleaves. Let's not be Pollyanna, but tell me about this day.
Well, everybody's voting today. I think there's more excitement surrounding this election. I counted it up. This is my 15th presidential election that I can remember from the time I was 5 years old. And I have never seen such energy and new voters coming in. And it seems that we have a real sharpening around issues like immigration and the donor class. And, you know, it's all coming to a head. That's the big news. We're not waiting till Labor Day to get engaged in this election. But the other big news, of course, is that the establishment on both sides of the aisle is being rocked. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have really, I think, a donor class and the spokespeople for the parties feeling that they aren't as effective as they have been in the past. It's going to be a really interesting day. Michigan this year is playing a really good role.
That was my follow-up. How much will Michigan matter today, Gleaves?
Well, Michigan is a proportional delegation state, which means if a candidate gets at least 15% of the vote that's cast today, that candidate will start racking up delegates. Now, next week, in their Tuesday, sort of the next Super Tuesday, you're going to have a lot of states that are winner-take-all. Mm-hmm. So Michigan is more finely calibrated to see where the support is going to go, and the candidates have put a lot of attention here to try to build momentum. We're in a very dynamic point in this at this part of the election because it looks as if the Rubio campaign has largely imploded. The Kasich and Cruz campaigns are vying for second place here in Michigan. Who would have thunk that about Cruz? Well, either of them just a few weeks ago. And Trump's momentum seems to have been halted. The anti-Trump, the Stop Trump movement seems to have succeeded in barraging the airwaves with negative ads that are giving people really a pause.
You want to talk about the Democratic side?
Yes, and on the Democratic side, I think Bernie Sanders sees Michigan as almost a last-ditch effort because of the proportional representatives, the delegates that come out of today's voting. Now, it's clear that Hillary Clinton has double-digit leads right now. She has run a very smart campaign in Michigan, as she does in every state. She has a team of people that goes in. They find the real hot-button issue. She's running really a state-by-state campaign as though she were running for senator in every state. So she came into a Michigan identifying the water crisis in Flint and seeing the devastation of our cities and saying, look, that's because of trade policy. And then saying, you know, the auto bailout is something that I voted for, and Senator Sanders did not vote for that. So she's identified three real big hot-button issues that have attracted voters to her. If Sanders, though, can make great headway in any state, it should be Michigan.
He did fill up Allendale's the campus, didn't he, last week?
Yes, he did. Yeah. What our arena out there in Allendale holds, I think, about 4,500 people, and he had 4,800 people.
Yeah, there we go. Gleaves, how are you asking us to do our homework? What do we believe? How do we best decide who we vote for?
That's a great question. You know, a lot of students are engaged this year in this, and you have to go back to your core principles. You have to vote your conscience, but you have to be strategic or at least tactical about it. You can't just throw away your vote. The vote this year is too important to throw away. Who is the most viable candidate that you can live with on the conservative side if you're a Republican or an independent who leans towards, say, fiscal conservatism? Who's the most viable but electable candidate whose principles fall in line with your principles if you're on the progressive or the liberal side? Then that's your candidate. So it's really important to study the issues. It's been challenging this year, Shelley, because the issues have been obscured by the gamesmanship and the clown parades and frankly, the terrible debasing of politics this year. It is an embarrassment to watch what's been happening on the Republican side of this, whatever your party. A lot of Republican friends of mine are hurting because they can't believe that a once great party has been reduced to this. This is the party of Lincoln. This is the party of Martin Luther King when he was a Republican. This is the party of Ronald Reagan that is now down in the mud, and it really is having trouble giving a compelling reason not to vote for Trump. There are a lot of people out there who are saying, don't vote for Trump no matter what you do. And what happens? A lot of people are saying, you know what, we're angry, we're upset, and Trump is giving voice to our frustration and anger. He's got our vote.
How does the Hauenstein Center for Presidential Studies study this year? What do your fellows take from this unique year?
We try to make sure that the fellows in our Cook Leadership Academy at the Hauenstein Center have every opportunity to go to the rallies. I give my staff release time to go and attend the rallies and become as informed as possible, because all of us are in touch with those students and they're seeking answers. This is a great test for our democracy this year. Shelley, these individuals on the Republican and the Democratic side, they are auditioning for President of the United States of America. Is their deportment, are their words, are they dignified? Do they take care with their words? Do they act serious? These are the kinds of things we need to know about the candidates. So that's why I give people release time and encourage people to go to the rallies, find out as much as you can, read the deep history of the parties as well, understand the principles that are informing some of the current discussions, even though this year it seems we're having to throw out the playbook.
Bottom line, as you were mentioning, exercise your right to vote.
Exercise your right to vote. We are in the midst of a shaking of the foundations. I don't know if it's quite a revolution yet, but it's clear to me that we are in a period of realignment that's on the lines of, say, the FDR New Deal realignment in the 1930s, or the Reagan Revolution in the 1980s, where Ronald Reagan, for example, was to bring over so many so-called Macomb County Democrats. That was a major realignment. I think we're seeing a major realignment this year.
Great. You mentioned President Ronald Reagan. We lost his bride this Sunday. What is her legacy, according to you and your team?
Nancy Reagan was a remarkable first lady. She took a lot of flack when she was first lady. I think all of us who were voting adults in those days remember that, you know, she was criticized for the expensive dresses and the new china and all of that. But, you know, if you look at, on balance, her achievements, she was really able to integrate a lot of Hollywood into the messaging of the president. That was she who did a lot of that. And she also brought a seriousness to the first lady's role as a real rock-bottom foundation for the president is important. Remember, Ronald Reagan, he was divorced, and so that's the second marriage. It's important to remember that Reagan treated her as a confidant, and she was able to steer him, whether it was staffing needs in the White House, which turned out to be very important because she made sure that certain people were fired, and so they would not have the kind of influence over the administration that they wanted. And also, she had a real good sense of which issues would play well and which wouldn't, all the way down to the way she used state dinners. She loved to entertain in the White House, and she used those state dinners to bring people together. And she had Dolly Madison's gift of putting people together at these dinner parties who needed to talk to each other. Maybe they had a conflict they needed to work out over a glass of champagne. Maybe they had an alliance to forge that they hadn't seen yet. But Nancy Reagan, with her emotional intelligence, was able to bring that to pass because she saw the possibility. She had that social imagination that was so key to the success of the Reagan Revolution. So she was our modern-day Dolly Madison, and in that sense recast the office of First Lady so that Michelle Obama and Laura Bush, Barbara Bush, Hillary Clinton all benefited from Nancy Reagan's strong presence in the White House.
How do we find out more about the center, please?
Well, go to www.hauensteincenter.org to see all that we are doing with the Cook Leadership Academy, and on our website and our exciting speakers. We have Alan Charles Kors coming in in just a few days on the 16th, and he's going to be talking about free speech issues, which have been very hot on campuses. And then on March 18th, Friday afternoon, we're going to have Kate Pugh Walters, one of our favorite right here at Grand Rapids, Grand Valley State University, and she's going to be speaking on leadership to the Academy.
Yay. Thanks so much, Gleaves, on behalf of a little bit talk of politics, a little bit talk about Nancy, and obviously the attention to the center. Life goes on. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Shelley.